Wake up. Wake up. Wake up with Hannah. Hannah Murray.
We're going over to the UK now to speak to Michael Dodd. He's an international speaker who empowers audiences to become inspirational communicators. Michael was a political correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation in Sydney and Canberra before becoming a foreign correspondent in London and Berlin. His latest book, Great Answers to Tough Questions at Work, includes case study examinations of people in the public spotlight who have done particularly well or badly while answering questions, and draws out the lessons for readers. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Great to be here with you in Spain, Anna, even though I'm in London.
It's lovely to chat with you. Thanks for joining us. So, Michael, can you give us an example about these tough questions? What are you referring to with that?
Well, my background is as a journalist, as you know, and so I'm used to asking people tough questions, what we call in Australia blowtorch on the belly questions. And now that I've become a recovering journalist, I have concentrated on helping people answer those tough questions that really tough interviewers ask. I'm sure a number of your listeners remember Jeremy Paxman on Newsnight, who asked really tough questions. Mm. But what I found was that when I was training people, that they would actually realize that they could also use the same techniques for answering tough questions from journalists to tough questions in their work life, tough questions from their clients, from their own staff sometimes, and particularly in those sales conversations with prospects who were putting up what the sales people call objections to what they're selling, and to actually take a more positive approach by giving great answers that were in some ways thought out in advance.
Mm. And do you think there is a difference or similarity between these tough questions that we get at work to our private lives?
There is a spin-off. I mean, we have specifically concentrated in Great Answers to Tough Questions at Work, as the name implies, to the workplace. But I have found people I've trained who've said, oh, yes, I will actually use these in domestic conversations as well. I wouldn't absolutely advocate it, but there have been cases, for example, when I've been training chief executives around the table, and one of them was actually on a board with her husband, and she used to reckon that she got a tough time from her husband at board meetings, and so she was going to use the techniques there. So hopefully that's worked out. I haven't heard any news to the contrary.
Haven't heard any about a divorce or anything?
Not so far.
So can you give us an example of some of these answers, great answers?
Well, one of the public ones that I refer to in the book is a case involving Richard Branson, or Sir Richard Branson, of course. And, you know, he's in charge of Virgin. And Virgin Trains had their first and I think only sort of major fatal train crash in the north of England, near Cumbria. And the unfortunate situation for Richard Branson was that he was away on holidays at the time, and he came back and he had a very tough situation because the world media had gathered there at the train site crash, and so they insisted on interviewing him with a crumpled up Virgin train in the background. And of course you can imagine the kind of questions they're asking about Virgin and safety and putting pressure on him, which is their job, the right thing to do. People like you as journalists, you sometimes have to put people under pressure and ask the questions that you know your audience really want them to ask. And yeah, he got across on the back of that some really positive points. You know, he said he drew attention to the fact that it was the only time ever at that stage that there had been a fatal Virgin crash. For example, he made a point that the train was a really tough train. He said it was built like a tank. It was one of those Appalachian tilting trains, a modern design. And he said if it hadn't been for this fantastic design of the train, the death toll would have been horrendous, would have been, you know, worse than it was. As it happened, there was one old lady died and several dozen people were injured, but the fatalities were actually less than what he said they otherwise would be. So he was able to sort of turn a negative into a kind of positive in an awful situation. He still obviously did the right thing and, spoke about his heart going out to the friends and family that was injured, etc. But at the same time, you know, he was able to put it in a wider perspective which was that the Virgin Train record was, you know, amazingly good. And that was perfectly reasonable in the circumstances, but a lot of people probably would have just fallen into a trap of answering the negative questions in a kind of negative way. In that sense, that shone out to me as a great example of someone who I happen to know has been trained, although I didn't train him myself, and was able to use the sort of the positivity that comes with the training and put it into practice.
Mm. Politicians, I suppose, are very good at this.
Well, I think some are very bad and some are very good.
Yeah.
If you want a famous, very bad example that I refer to, and some of your listeners will remember this one, it's where Jeremy Paxman, who I mentioned earlier, you know, asked Michael Howard, who was then Home Secretary, the same question 14 times in a row about whether he had overruled the person in charge of the prison system after some jail escapes on the Isle of Wight. And, that became a famous interview because Michael Howard, you know, didn't directly answer the question, and Jeremy Paxman just kept pressing the point. And that was seen, you know, as an example of a politician who wasn't addressing it properly. He just kept going. He had a point he wanted to make, but he didn't actually answer the question first. And this is seen, I think, by people around the world who don't necessarily love politicians, that, you know, they need to be straighter. And the book, Great Answers to Tough Questions at Work, sort of holds this up as a bad example because great answers involve actually answering the question straight up. So the last thing I want is people to be more like politicians. I want them to be less like, at least bad politicians, and more like the good ones. And there are good ones out there who do actually answer the question first up. They also get a point across that they want to make, which is perfectly reasonable. But the sort of gospel we preach is that you should answer the question first.
Yes. Is there any evidence to suggest that men are better at this than women, or vice versa?
I've trained a lot of men and a lot of women in some masterclass groups, and I find them pretty equal on the whole. The only difference I've found is that I've never had a man in tears, but I've had a couple of women in tears, and it's not because me in the role of asking tough questions has been too brutal. The only reason that they've got sort of teary about it has been that they've got their own expectations very high. They were typically ambitious young women, and they didn't live up to their own expectations. And funnily enough, in the instances I mentioned, and there were very few, the women ended up being the best of the group. So they went through a bit of a tough patch along the training way, but when they actually got it and put it into action, they ended up being very, very good at it. So I think it's a skill that both sexes can become very good at.
Mm. And it has nothing to do with being aggressive, does it?
More often the other way around. I mean, I very much want people to focus on the audience, on, you know, the prospect or the client or the staff member asking the question as a starting point about what they need from you as the answerer. So even if the question is aggressive, and, you know, they often are. It's why we've got this term in Australia, blowtorch on the belly questioning, which a politician called Neville Rann came up with to describe what he thought it felt like to be on the end of tough journalist questions. But really, typically a really good answer to an aggressive question actually, satisfies the audience and tells the audience in a typically a nice way what the audience need to know. I think aggression on behalf of answerers is something generally to be avoided.
Yeah. And any kind of top tips for people listening, something they can take away with them today?
When you're asked a tough question, then just think for a moment, what is the most positive thing you can say on the topic? Now, you may not start with that in your answer because I'm advocating people should actually answer the question, but the thing is, once you've answered the question, you have a license under the normal rules of conversation to say something else as well. And so if you move from there to coupling it with the best thing you can say, then you may find you end up giving yourself a more balanced, positive answer, which moves the conversation for both you and the questioner and any outside audience in a more positive direction.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called Great Answers to Tough Questions at Work, and it's by Michael Dodd, who we've been chatting to today. Who specifically, Michael, do you think would be particularly interested in the book? Who have you aimed it at? Who's your audience?
It's aimed at people throughout the workforce. Anyone, I say, who is ambitious, who wants to move on, because when whatever profession you're in, what happens when you get more experience, you actually often move away from those basic skills and your conversation skills become more important or even more important than your actual basic skills that you might have learned at university and school and put into action. So anyone who wants to sort of do better at work will find the book really helpful. And I should mention that your listeners can get a discount on it if they use the code word Dodd, D-O-D-D, which is my surname. If they visit the thisiscapstan.com website, they can buy the book. If they use the code, they can actually get a discount along the way.
Okay.
So hopefully that's helpful for them as well.
Fantastic. Capstone.com for that. Michael?
This is capstone.com.
Oh, this is capstone.com. Okay, perfect. Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
Really good to talk with you, Hannah.